great future priest, Deacon Jacob Hawkins.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. You may be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. Today, I will be speaking about the benefits of eating honey and butter. Now we know, through prophecy, Yahshua will eat honey and butter. And Yahweh says, eat honey and butter. Now, for my first scripture, if you turn to Isaiah 7. Now, this is a prophecy of Yahshua here. Isaiah 7, verse 15. It says, butter and honey will he eat, so he may know to refuse evil and choose righteousness. But before this child will know to refuse evil and choose righteousness, the land that you dread will be forsaken by both of her kings. So that prophecy says that Yahshua will eat honey and butter. I looked up this scripture in the word honey, in the Strong's Exhaustive Concordance. And it comes from word number 1706 to 1707. And it means to be gummy. Honey, it's stickiness, biennial syrup. So it got so sticky at certain points and times, especially during the winter, that they called it syrup. It goes on to say a sticky mass, a sweet substance. Now, honey comes from bees. I have a picture here. That's a beehive right there. And you see all the bees that are in the hive. And it says honeybee. A mature honeybee nest is formed of between 20,000 and 100,000 closely related female workers, which all share the nest single queen as their mother. Now these 20,000 to 100,000 bees all work in unity. I've never seen anything that says that this colony of bees were fighting with another colony of bees. They all work in unity. Just like us, we need to work in unity. Now, it says, as a worker ages, she moves through a range of jobs. First, she starts inside the nest where she cleans, tends to the queen and the developing larva. Then she goes to another job, such as defending against attack and foraging. Now, the foraging, they call them scouts. They hunt independently and return with lots of possible options. When a scout finds a great source of food, it dances on the swarm surface, pacing out the dimensions of the cavity to recruit other scouts to visit her find. So bees communicate, just like us. Now, if you see right there, the biggest bee you'll find in the nest is the queen bee. Then the second one, the medium one, is the worker bee, which is a female bee. Then the drone, right here, it's the male bee that deals with the mating and everything for the queen. Now, bees share information. As I read earlier, if you see this middle bee here is dancing the dimensions of where to find food. And you see all the rest of them looking around at her to go and find the food. Now it says, bees share information about the location of flowers using the most exceptional forms of communication in the animal kingdom called the waggle dance. Scouts return to the nest and inform their sisters of the distance to and the direction of a rich patch of flowers. So if it's a stronger dance, it means it's a better sight of flowers or pollen. Now, how bees make honey. I have this here. Here's a picture of the bee. It has little pouches on its legs that collects the pollen, as you see right here. It's on the flower. Now, it says honeybee, processing pollen. It says the colony is made up of sterile female workers, male drones, and a queen. In the hive, flower nectar is repeatedly swallowed and regurgitated by the workers until it becomes honey. Then the stored pollen and honey are then fed by workers to the developing larvae in their care. So they regurgitate and they keep eating the honey until they know that the right amount of minerals that are in that honey. They keep on swallowing it, eating it, and regurgitating it until it becomes honey. So that's what we eat, regurgitated flower pollen. But it's great, right? Yahweh says to eat it. Now, from the second book of Yisrael, it says, the Hebrews knew this. Many of them are involved in medicine and pharmaceuticals. They will not use honey because of the heating process that goes into their medicines and drugs. It is a poison. It puts off fumes that will actually enter your body and cause damage. So when they boil this honey, we know pastors said don't boil the honey. Because when you boil it, it puts off fumes that when they enter your body, when you eat it, it'll hurt you. It'll harm your body. Now, the prophets knew more about honey than the scientists do today. Now, I have an article here from Mail Online. It says, honey may take this sting out of NHS superbugs. It says, honey has the power to defeat the hospital superbugs, which claim up to 5,000 lives a year. So these superbugs are killing people more and more often. They're killing people year by year. Renowned for thousands of its medicinal properties, it is able to kill off mutant bacteria, including MRSA, which has defeated all but the strongest antibiotics. Honey contains natural antibacterial agents. Honey was revered by the ancient Greeks and Egyptians as a powerful medicinal agent and used to help heal burns and sores. So they knew the benefits of honey, that it would heal the burns, the battle scars and things from fighting. Now during World War I, German physicians mixed it with cod liver oil to use as a surgical dressing for battle wounds. So they used it during the war. Dr. Cooper says, I have found that even at concentrations as low as 3%, honey is able to inhibit the growth of the bacteria. He also found it attacked the bugs even when it was diluted in another medium. So even when it was diluted to 3%, as low as 3%, it still did its job as to kill off this bacteria. It says, higher concentrations of honey would destroy MRSA. Now listen to this, this is very important. Honey is primarily composed of fructose, glucose, and water. It also contains enzymes such as vitamin B, C, and iron, magnesium, calcium, sodium, silica, magnesium, and potassium. Now these are all things that are beneficial for your body. That's why Yahweh says to eat honey and butter. It says, Dr. Cooper said supermarket honey was not suitable for treating wounds. Even honey you might buy in health food shops could contain bacteria spores, which you would not want to introduce to wounds. So even the scientists are figuring out that half of the honey that's in supermarkets is not real honey. So you do not know what you're putting on your wounds. Now, In Proverbs 23, verse 13 through 14, for your notes, King Solomon said, as honey is sweet for the taste, so shall the knowledge of wisdom be sweet to your soul. He even told his sons to eat honey. He knew the benefits of it. But he said, don't eat too much, or it'll make you vomit. Now, butter. In Genesis 18, verse 8, they gave butter to the people. I looked up the word butter. It comes from word number 25, 29, and it's curdled milk or cheese, butter from cow's milk. Now, when you shake cream or whole cow's milk, it'll start to make butter. Now, this is a Jersey milk cow. And Pastor said in the sixth book of Yeshua, page 238, that he always kept a cow. And Dr. Price here, he was reading an article. The answer was X factor, the missing link for better bones. It was X factor, an old-fashioned butter. Get this, what he means by old-fashioned butter. Unpasteurized butter, raw butter from grass-fed cattle. So we know Yahweh says to eat honey and butter. And we know butter will help your bones. And that's in conclusion. Remember, Yahweh gave these things for us. He knew the benefits. That's why he gave it to us to use. Like honey for helping your mind to choose between righteousness and evil, to choose from what's right and wrong. And then also the honey and butter for strength. And for your notes, 2 Samuel 17, verse 29, David gave his army honey and butter for strength while they were fighting. So remember, Yahweh gave this for us. That's why we need to eat honey and butter, because Yahweh knew the benefits. And with that, I'll turn it over to the great Kahan Kenan Yehan.
Shabbat Shalom, saints of Yahweh. Shabbat Shalom. You may be seated. I'm glad Yahweh called it honey and the benefits of it. You know, as we just heard, I hope you paid very close attention to this, because this is something that Pastor has been teaching us for many, many years. The benefits of putting certain things in our bodies because of the health effects that they would have on us, particularly in choosing righteousness. And that honey, as he read in Isaiah chapter 7, Pastor, you know, he always amazed me, because he said of the things that he found out that science has brought out in the latter years, he said he saw this first in the Holy Scriptures. And I remember in my younger years in the house of Yahweh, I thought, man, that is amazing, because a lot of these things concerning microorganisms and the things that were in space, you know, he said he knew these things because he saw them in Scriptures first. And I thought about, you know, the great men like Adam and even righteous Abel, the first priest, and Yashub, as he's known in the King James Version as Job. These men, they knew these things because Yahweh explained them. He laid them for us in the Scriptures. He laid out the whole plan of creation for mankind and the prophecies and what he was going to do. And the beautiful thing that Yahweh has given us in honey, you wouldn't think something so simple. I know science is searching for a pill right now to control the behavior of young men and women who seem to be out of control, but Yahweh gives us the simple solutions in the Scriptures. Eat the honey and butter so they can choose righteousness. Now, the righteousness has to be taught, right? It has to be taught to them continuously, but if it's taught to them and you combine it with the eating of the honey and the butter, then they will choose it. That's what Yahweh says. That's the evidence we have from the Scriptures. And if we believe it, we'll show it through our obedience. Now, I really want to get into my sermon here today. I don't have very much time. You know us missionary folk, we have a tendency to ramble on. Somebody was saying to me, you know, we kind of need to have a kind of a shocker up here, so when the time comes and we're going on and, you know, somebody's behind the curtain, you know, okay, we need to go and wrap it up. The shocker just, you know, gives you. So I said, no, we can't do that, because somebody's going to think we got hit with Spirit Holy or something like that. And, oh, he got hit with Spirit Holy, you know. And they're going to think, man, Kanani, he must need a lot of it. He keeps getting shocked. But But I want to ask you this. I want to put this thought in your mind because it's very important to us. And I hope we realize and we understand the time period that we're in right now. And we don't have much time. We really don't. If we think we're going to trot along for another 30, 40 years, you know, it's crazy. You can look at the prophecies. We can see what's taking place in the area in and around the Great River Euphrates, the disease epidemics and so forth that's building up right now. It's here, brother. You know, this is the last generation. The seventh trumpet is sounding that warning alarm, that message out, as the great deacon said, take heed to the warning that Yahweh has given you and prepare yourself for the kingdom of Yahweh. The question I have for you is the kingdom of Yahweh real to you? Is the kingdom of Yahweh real to you? And I asked that question after talking with some of the fellow priests and just kind of wondering, you know, what do our people think of when we think about the kingdom of Yahweh? Do we have the goal in sight? Are we still keeping the goal of this kingdom, the hope of our calling, the promise of protection? Yes, the promise of protection that Yahweh has given to his house in these last days. He's always given that to his work and the workers who do the work and carry this out. This is why Pastor said, you know, find a place in the work of Yahweh, find your job and stick with it, because that is your protection. Remember in Revelation chapter 3, if you turn back there with me just right quick, I'm going to try to... Revelation chapter 3, in referring to this seventh era of the house of Yahweh, Yahweh said, and this was the message that Yahweh gave to Yeshua, and he sent it to his Malak to give to the Malak over the congregation of the house of Yahweh at Abel. In verse 8, he says, I know your works. Behold, I have set before you an open door, and no man can shut it. So that we can go ahead and get this work done that is ordained to this seventh era in preaching and publishing the message. And that message is going to draw out a huge amount of people, two billion people. I was talking to one of the deacons yesterday, and we were talking about some of the cities that we had been to. And some of them, you know, Abilene has a population of about, you know, 125, I think now, 100, something like that, 1,000 people. Another city we saw had 300 something thousand. You know, of course, Dallas has, you know, in the Metroplex has a little over a million or so. And, you know, we were saying that, you know, even out of the 2 billion people that's going to come to the house of Yahweh. Now that's huge. And that's a huge amount of number. I remember in our first night in the early 90s, you know, some of the numbers of the feast were in the 13, 14, somewhere up around there, hundreds, you know. They were really large numbers, and there were a lot of people here. Now imagine when those numbers start to get into the tens of thousands, then the hundreds of thousands, then the millions, then the billions, you know. We've got a great job ahead of us. But even with that great number of 2 billion people, we're really still a small amount of people in comparison to all of mankind who's ever lived, in comparison to all the universe, not to mention our galaxy, just our galaxy alone, you know, of the billions and trillions of beings that are out there and being born continuously every day, we're just a small number. But Yahweh has never needed large numbers and large groups of people to do the job that is magnificent as it is, as he has proven in these last days. He's taken a small group of people and he's put out a huge amount of work. And Pastor said, people come here and they think they're going to see these huge, you know, multi-story printing presses and, you know, massive factories just pumping out books and garments and food and things like that. No, it's just a quiet, simple, oaky life taking place here. What did one priest say? Ordinary people getting extraordinary things done because we work together. You know, we're in unity, as one of the deacons said. This unity has to be in our hearts, and this attitude of servitude that pastors constantly striving for us to get in our minds, that we have to have an attitude of servitude. This is the characteristic that we saw coming from Yahweh, and he demonstrated this in those first 6 days that we see in Genesis. And he made all of these preparations for mankind. He had already laid this out in this plan and said, I'm going to bring up creatures, if you want to call us that. I'm going to bring up some people who are going to be flesh and blood. They're going to be subject to tests and trials. And I'm going to put them in an area kind of way off on the outside arm of this galaxy here, this Milky Way galaxy, and I'm going to, at certain times, give them teachers to train them in the laws of Yahweh. Now, I'm going to allow them to be subjected to the influences of the tree of mixture and righteousness and evil, but I'm going to still make sure there's a work going to show them the way in which they should go. And they're going to choose. Some of them will choose not to follow it, but the top, the chief, the cream of the crop, if you want to call it, they're going to choose righteousness. And you watch and you see. If Yahweh was a betting man, he's got his money on us, brother. He got his money on us. He has it on this great house. Yahweh brings us here to succeed. He doesn't bring us here to fail, okay? He's not a cruel, vengeful God who's just waiting for one opportunity for you to slip up so he can strike you with a bolt of lightning or something like that. He wants us to succeed. He wants us, he tells us, become perfect, become holy, become righteous as I am. He wouldn't tell us that if he had an ulterior motive. You know, that comes from straight from the gods. That's the characteristics of a carnal mind, which Yahweh is not. And see, I'm rambling. I've got only two cards to go through and I haven't gotten through the first line. But are we seeking the kingdom? Is the kingdom real to us? Let's turn over to Matthew chapter 6. And some of these you're probably going to have to just jot down for your notes. But Matthew chapter 6, because I was thinking about this scripture here, and Pastor had read it, and it just kind of got my mind to thinking about it. But Yahshua said, of course, you know, he went back here starting in verse 25, and he was telling the people, you know, don't anxiously worry about what you're going to eat and what you're going to drink and what you're going to wear and consider this and that. And, you know, Yahweh provides these things for his creation. Don't worry about these temporary things, okay? He said, the Gentiles, they worry about these things too. But Yahweh knows that you have need of them, okay? And he will provide in due time. If you think back to the different time periods in your life where needs have arisen, and you had no idea how you were going to provide to get that need for something that was necessary. I'm not talking about, you know, I need a new set of wheels or something like that, or I need a new this or that, or gold ring or necklace or something. A need, something that you actually needed. I remember this going through the cleanses, and you know, it was certain times where I'm like, man, I don't know how we're going to do this, but Yahweh provided. He provided, and I didn't have to go out of my way. Yahweh took care, and he takes care of all his people because I get the same reports in talking to many of you. But in 33, he says, but you seek first, okay? Yeshua is telling us the order of importance of this kingdom. He said, seek you first, not second, or when you get the opportunity, or, you know, if you think about it, start thinking about the kingdom. He said, seek first the kingdom of Yahweh and his righteousness. Now the two go hand in hand, because if you understand the kingdom of Yahweh, you'll understand what it's based on. And when you think about the kingdom, I kind of want to put this in your mind. It's not some way out there type of, you know, shiny place with just sparkles all over the place. You know, the kingdom of Yahweh, we are the kingdom of Yahweh, brother. We are the working kingdom of Yahweh. The kingdom, think about a kingdom, you know, a kingdom of people. Let's turn over, hold your spot right there. And of course, he says all these things will be added to you. Actually, you can let that go. Let's go back to Exodus chapter 19. But when you think about a kingdom and you think about a king, his kingdom is made up of not so much land mass or area. I'm right there. But it's made up of the people. And everybody in their place doing their job. If you remember the example that was given with some of the kings, Xerxes and so forth, they had princes and governors and, you know, people in different place. And even the Babylon, they showed different setups of the kingdom. And Solomon had all this set up as well. Well, everybody had their place. They had their job and they performed in their areas that the king had placed them in. Well, that was the makeup of the kingdom. You know, we have the same thing here in the house of Yahweh, different offices, different jobs, different positions and so forth that are given, and people are given authority over those jobs in order to get that task accomplished. But it's under the king, under the here we have the chief of the priest here on earth, our pastor and overseer, guiding us in the direction for the purpose of getting this work done. Pastor's mind is on the work, and he wants our minds to be on the work as well. But look at 19 verse 5. Yahweh said to Moshe, and he told Moshe to tell this to the children of Israel. He says, now, if you will truly obey my voice by keeping my covenant, all right, this covenant that Yahweh gave that if you will keep these laws, I will be your father and you will be my people. Same covenant he gave with our forefather Abraham. Then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the laws that you shall speak to the children of Israel. So we see that the kingdom is not only based on the laws, but it's based on a people, a body of people upholding the laws and using them in their duties and what their functions and their different capacities, as Yeshua said, or one of the apostles said, you know, which every joint supplies to this body of Messiah for the purpose of getting the work done. And the work, whether it's cooking or working at the press or working in the mailroom or cleaning the sanctuary, we all have a place in Yahweh's work. And, you know, pastor has been encouraging us and the priests and the, you know, the kohanas and so forth to stand in your place, because right now we're training for a permanent position. Well, you might not be behind a broom forever, but you might be pushing and guiding other people to clean up the earth or to clean up the universe when the time period comes. So, you know, in everything that you set your mind to do or set your hand to do, do it with all your might, but don't just look at the fact that, you know, I have to push this broom or I have to stir this spoon or I have to clean this toilet. Look at it as you're training for an eternal position in Yahweh's kingdom, and you're proving yourself to Yahweh right now if you will do it with all your heart, soul, and might, and if you will be joyous in carrying out your job, okay? Have a joyous attitude about everything you do, that attitude of servitude, knowing that it's not only going to be a blessing to you when you get to partake of it, but also to others, even those who we don't even know yet. Yeshua did the very same thing, serving those who were not yet even in existence. And this has to be our attitude as well. Well, I'm out of time. Hopefully, Yahweh willing, I'll be able. I know we got eternity, so I'm sure I'll talk to you again sometime. But may Yahweh bless your understanding. If you're lawfully stand. I'd like to turn it over to the great Kahan Tefania Hawkins. Shalom, everyone. Please be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. We have some really tremendous news about fulfillment of prophecy this week. And we're going to kind of revisit an issue, which is, I don't know if you remember, the octopus banking system with the cutting off of Iran. We're going to go back to that. We're going to start with three stories about the SWIFT banking system, which cuts off Iran. And we'll play that over. And I've got a couple of parts that repeat for you to notice. But one of them is this matches with Revelation 13, 17, which talks about no one being able to buy or sell unless they receive the mark of the beast. Now remember, the beast is a system. And the man that describes this was the CEO of this SWIFT banking system that controls international commerce. And in one part, he talks about it prevents them from having access to or from the system. Now, to the system is buying, and from the system is selling. And that's where they get their money. So, I repeat that. I have that repeating a couple of times, but watch that and watch for the use of the word system, because that's the beastly governmental system, and tie it to Revelation 13, 17. Then we have a story about and that begins, first of all, with their considering the sanctions, and then with their just about to do the sanctions, and then there's a story about just after the sanctions and the effect that it has, which is basically to significantly impact Iran's ability to sell its oil to the point where they actually store it offshore in ships because they can't get rid of it. And this is exactly what's being spoken of. And this couldn't have been done, thousands of years ago, even 100 years ago, but it's because of this computerized system that they use for buying and selling. And, this all has to do with this explosion of knowledge that we're seeing, which Kerry classifies as an explosion of technology. Now, then we're going to see Obama speaking on lifting the sanctions. Okay, and this is just recently. This was this week.
And this is at a period of time, and you want to reference page 144 of Birth of the Nuclear Baby, where Pastor talks about this nine-month period which we're in. Now, there was a story recently which was let's first of all, I just want to read you something real quick, which is from Department of State, the U.S. Department of State. This sets the time period for the beginning of this 9 months. This is the official setting of the time period. This is from the U.S. Secretary of State. It's a press release, July 28th, 2013. Today, Secretary Kerry spoke with Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas in Israel and Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu and personally extended an invitation to send senior negotiating teams to Washington to formally resume direct final status negotiations. Now, that is Article 5, Section 2 of the Oslo Accord, signed September 13th, 1993. That's Article 5, Section 2 of that Oslo Accord. Initial meetings are planned for the evening of Monday, July 29th, here's the date, and Tuesday, July 30th, 2013. The Israelis will be represented by Justice Minister Zvi Livni and Yitzhak Malko, and the Palestinians will be represented by Chief Negotiator Saeb Arakat and Muhammad Shataya. As Secretary of Kerry announced on July 19th in Amman, Jordan, the Israelis and the Palestinians had reached agreement on the basis for resuming direct final status negotiations, again, Article 5, Section 2 of the Oslo Peace Accord, that's permanent status, peace through peace. The meetings in Washington will mark the beginning of these talks. So there we have the date, July 29th, 2013. Then we have an article in the New York Post, which talks about U.S. diplomacy's new woe, because they're all depressed about this. They're pessimistic about the success of this, but it's going to go through. Yet Kerry, who arrived, and this is by Ben Avni in the New York Post, November 7th, 2013. This is basically this week, last week. Yet Kerry, who arrived in Jerusalem Wednesday, is reportedly planning to dramatically up the stakes. A dovish Knesset member, Zahava Galan, claims the United States is planning to present Palestinians and Israelis by January with a take-it-or-leave-it proposal to bridge their differences. This would follow Kerry's last big idea. Now notice she's pointing out the strangeness of this nine-month period. This summer to time limit negotiations to 9 months. She notices this is a strange thing. With a pact to be signed at the end of that period, ending once and for all one of the world's most intractable diplomatic entanglements. So in 9 months, we're going to end the most intractable diplomatic entanglement. She's noticing, this man is noticing that how strange it is, this nine-month period. And then they say, oops, as the first trimester of that pregnancy ends, talk seems to be exactly where pessimists said they would be, in trouble. Okay, so we're at the end of the first trimester. Now here comes Barack Obama, and he's talking about ending these sanctions. And if you notice, what he mentions is they're going to have Iran 6 months to show that they're willing to act, or else the United States is going to ramp things up. He's going to dial things up. So in 6 months, that's the end of the 9 months also. So it's synchronized with that exact same time period. And then we go to the veterans are going to describe war in 6 words, which is interesting because one of the men says war is absolute madness. There's no rhyme or reason to it. He says through madness comes clarity and understanding. That's what this man says, which is in a sense true because it's through suffering that we understand the necessity to turn from our sins. And then we have Kerry, who's going to try to calm, he's calming Netanyahu down basically. And this is all occurring this week. But Netanyahu was really upset about this deal with Iran, that they have 6 months now to the end of this nine-month period. And he was beside himself, actually. Kerry calmed Netanyahu down, and he says no agreement has been reached about, he calls it the end game here. He says that's the subject of these negotiations, the end game. So let's play the news.
SWIFT is essentially the computer hub that processes the world's financial transactions. It's been called the central nervous system of finance.
Now, just real quick before we introduce Israel Hawkins, the last story was a little fuzzy, but what they're talking about there is the fact that Netanyahu was upset that the United States was doing negotiations with Iran. Now, that was the six-month negotiations, which brings us again to the end of that nine-month period because they just began. And what Kerry is doing is he's calming Netanyahu down, and Netanyahu has been calmed down, and Kerry is classifying this as the end game. And then we repeated that, he is classifying this as the negotiations for the end game. So now, would everyone please stand? The greatest teacher in the world, the great Kohan Israel Hawkins!
Hello, everyone! Praise Yahweh! And we got a crowd, Yahweh! Praise Yahweh! You may be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. I got to tell you something about this sermon I'm about to bring. Not sure I'll get through the whole thing, but today. But I stayed awake. I woke up at 3 o'clock last night, and I stayed awake the rest of the night praying and asking Yahweh. I know what I'm supposed to bring, and but I don't know when. And of course, this is what's been bugging me, and I have it ready to bring, and of course have it ready to bring. But I said I don't want to bring it until I'm absolutely sure that it's the right time for it. So I kept praying last night for an answer. I could tell you all the clouds that that went by from 3 o'clock on. And, oh, baloney, Israel, straighten up. Boy. I said, if you'll just give me a yes or no. And if it's yes, I'll go ahead and bring it today. And I kept looking out the window this morning and still waiting on an answer. And couldn't get it, and finally I called one of my trusted deacons and his family for watching the clouds, and I said, told him what I was up against, and he called back in a few minutes and he said, "You got that answer last week." I said, "Really?" He said, "Yeah, it's right over the top of your office." And he said, "We got a picture of it." And it was a yes. So, well, of course, that's the way Yahweh works. And I'll get over this in a minute, maybe. The laws are so set up. You saw how they're bringing sanctions against Iran. I told Stefania this morning they've got to understand that the Pope is in control of this, you know. And Malachi Martin brought this out in his book, The Keys of This Blood, and he said these people say whether to take a nation down or let it stand, and of course that's what they're doing, is taking Iran down, like they did Iraq and Afghanistan. But of course, this is a different nation with different powers. So is Syria. They got different things that they got to look for here because they don't want it to turn against them. The armies that you see in the world today, they're not making these decisions. They said when a general stopped the war, right after we wrote the book, published the book, The Nuclear Baby. And Of course, we know from prophecy that Yahweh held back the wars and at that time, but they could have started at that time. And the earth would have been devastated. Half of the work would have been done. Our people would not have come to what I know we've got to come to. And that'll be brought out today because it's our promise that in this time period. It's our promise that we're going to achieve close to what Yahshua achieved. Not totally, but close to it. And of course, Yahweh has a way for us to do that. And he's bringing it one step at a time. But the point is, the wars could have began. And now they're saying, as you watched here in the last part, you know, now we're speaking war. We're speaking the end. And of course, that was all in their speeches there, if you got it. If you didn't, you need to go back and listen to this broadcast again. Maybe you could get it from our news team. They bring it so much clearer than the others. But watch it over and over till you get what they said there. There's so many things that was shown in those news clippings today that you really want in your mind so you can understand these prophecies. Right now, the Pope is in very much control. That is, he and the Vatican. He is the clown, of course. If you noticed the other day, he's wearing a balloon on his nose, and well, that fits his character. He's the Santa Claus, I said, of today's Catholic Church, the Vatican. That's about all he is show. He's trying to show forth the Catholic Church as something caring, you know, that they have mercy and caring for their people while they're planning these wars and saying, you know, well, let's put a nation in here let's put an army in here to kill off this group here and get the killing started. And they think nothing about a first strike or dropping a bomb that, of course, it'll only kill the soldiers. Those bombs, you know, they're guided and they'll only kill the soldiers over there. That's given the evil soldiers. They'll only kill the evil soldiers. The ones that's wearing the black hats, it will kill. The ones that's wearing the white hats, you know, well, it spares them. Well, that's the cock and bull story that they're bringing across to you. Those people are suffering greatly, as we tried to get you to understand when we built all the props down here and had the displays during the feast, of what it's like after a war. And of course, I've seen this all my life. I think Yahweh made it possible. We had a family that lived close to us in Oklahoma. The first time I met them, they were on my dad's place and that he had leased. They had dug a hole up in the side of a riverbank, which that's what they were living in. The guy had an old tarp that they got from somewhere, looked like maybe a covered wagon. That's where they were living at that time. And they had 9 children. They wound up with 12 that I know of before it stopped. But they had 9 children when they were living in that, where he had shoveled out a hole up in the riverbank. And the thing could have caved in on them. And we told Dad, and he went over there to see the man. He said, well, that house, I was going to put a worker in it. But Dad told the man to go ahead and move in it. It was a two-room house, and then he moved out of that later because Dad told him he could live there till he found him another place. Well, he got another place that he leased as a sharecropper and moved into it, and I think it was a 3-room house, and that's when he finished up his family, bringing it up to 12. Their names were Hackney. And they lived close to us for years. I was friends with their children and knew the whole bunch. And I saw them start coming home from the war. And this, their family, the family just couldn't stand to look at them, you know. They had limbs missing. they were mentally deranged and having trouble coping with their lives at that time. The father, he got so depressed about it, he finally shot himself, killed himself, and then of course the mother was left with to straighten out the mess, her and the older boys. But anyway, that was what I was brought up with. I saw war. I didn't see war, but I saw the results of war. Well, here, the Pope today now, he's putting on a show, and he's asking for a survey on the modern family. And he says, whatever is acceptable with the modern family, that's what the Catholic Church upholds. That's the Catholic Church. That's our character. Now, of course, what he's hunting here is majority rule. And if he can find out from this survey that the majority is accepting sodomy at this time, then he's going to open up and hush up some mouths that are condemning sodomy in the Catholic Church. If he finds out that they're liking and that there's more against it than they are for it, and this is what he's hunting. Also abortion. This is a big thing. And they're wanting him to take, wanting the Catholic Church to take a stand on it. And of course, the Santa Claus is out there getting the answers to bring back to the ones that make the decisions. He doesn't make the decisions. It's handed down for him to make, as Malachi Martin told you in the book, The Keys of This Blood. And of course, making the decisions are already made for these armies. It's just a matter of bringing it around to depopulate the earth. Well, this thing here, it says the pontiff with a penchant for surprises. The guy that wrote this, he's great at making the Pope look great. It looks like he's already distributing the gifts under the Christmas tree. For surprises is making new waves by launching a survey of his flock on issues facing modern families, from gay marriages to divorce. Very specific questions are being sent to parishes around the globe in preparation for the next year's synod of bishops, which he has plenty. They handed me I told him I wanted the amount of ruling priest, which I haven't got yet, but bishops alone now, there's 412,236. Now, he has a pretty fair working crew right there in the bishops. That's not the, that now these are decision makers. They help to prepare the books and keep the books and order the money flow and so forth. Let's see, I was hunting one more thing here. The permanent deacons. They have 39,000, 564. We have almost 564. No, we don't have nearly that many. But I'm telling you how far he is here. And he's asking for this survey so they can make a decision as to what they teach. Meaning they don't go to the Holy Scriptures for their teaching. They have nothing to do with the Holy Scriptures. He pretends to quote the Scriptures, but I thought the other day that he was quoting the Scripture when he said, now the gospel is the gospel. But then later on I found out he was quoting a dead priest when he said that. And he wasn't quoting the Scriptures at all. Well, Vatican launches a world survey on modern family life. I think that's the only thing I need to read from that. There's a stack of it. Here's the clown that's doing all of this. If you see the bubble on his nose. Well, that about fits his character right there, because he's set up to bring forth a decent look in the mirror. It says Pope Francis won the internet, literally. So he's really making waves in the world. Buenos Aires Herald, Pope Francis amid five most powerful people in the world. Amid the five most powerful. Now, you got to remember now that I'm on the bottom of that list. I'm the one that's most hated in the world. That is those who are not written in the Lamb's Book of Life. I'm the most hated. Pope Francis ranks among Forbes' most powerful people. It gives the powerful people October 31, 2013, who are the most powerful people in the world according to Forbes. First on the list is Russia's president, then the United States. Russia's President Putin, and of course Barack Obama, and followed by China. Fourth on the list is Pope Francis. he has on Twitter, and he's bragging about this now. He says he has on Twitter 10 million followers. 10 million. That's a little above me. That's a little above the house of Yahweh. Pope's Twitter account attracts 20 million followers. This morning, the news is out, and they sent me this, a couple of pictures here. There's the Pope with his Twitter, but it's going down. It's going to go down. I'll say that. It's going to go down. This one is going to come up. And that says 891 Twitter to 195 Twitter. So that's already up above him. 102 following. He's got 8 followers. But he's got over a following, but he's got 3 million followers, it says there. He said 10 million. That may not be the first lie he's told. I don't know. And we have 439 followers. So we're making waves. We're rowing pretty heavy to catch up. In one of the largest news agencies, this article comes out, and it's the head news item on the list. With Typhoon Haiyan being the strongest storm on record, nothing can be found in history that gets close to this. Israel Hawkins says he knows why it took place and how to stop these massive disasters. And they gave that whole article in here, the whole thing. Search the internet and you can find it there. I don't know. They just told me it was a major newspaper, and I don't have time to to go to see where it came from. But the news media is taking our stories, and we're tops in reading right now. The Pope, he has a little bit of something to say here and there, but it's all nonsense, you know. And I don't know what he's fishing for some of the times. It looks like he's almost trying. Maybe he's so confused he don't know what he's saying. The West Point to host first wedding. Now, if you know anything about West Point, West Point is one of the top colleges for training our Army officers, of which there will be a lot more brought out on this, because I want articles showing how much money is being taken out of your pocket to support your security, which we don't have, but is supposedly fixed to support our security. And of course, the shootings go on, even in the airports and schools, they're still taking place. So it pretty much shows, you know, the mentality on both sides, the shooter and the ones that's supposed to be guarding the airports and the schools and so forth. There's just no way to solve that problem the way they're going at it. Now, maybe they could put a army officer or police officer for every, for every student, in the school. But then who's to say when the police officer's mind is going to snap? And he's got a gun and got a license to use it. So, and we're having this take place, you know. We're having police officers beating up on people. That's no reason for it. I just saw an article of a district attorney who had sentenced innocent people to jail, and he was laughing about the fact that he was found guilty of this crime of withholding evidence that would have set that man free that he accused of murdering his wife. Later they found out that he didn't murder his wife, and they got the evidence and found out, but he had withheld this evidence and sent the man to prison. But he sent a bunch more to prison, but he agreed laughingly to serve 10 days for a nonprofit organization as punishment for his crime. So what if this would have been a lower class person? Is the law not supposed to be equal? Now, this should tell you that there is no justice, as Isaiah the prophet said. There's no justice in the world. Does that not back it up? 10 days, and he laughed about it, and they said he would probably, on good behavior, serve 4 out of the 10. Well, the academy, West Point, praised. Been praised ever since I started seeing movies in the movie theater. And now the biggest thing going for them, West Point UN, New York, 2 graduates of West Point are set to become the first men to marry. Now the Pope is wanting to know how many is on his side in this so he can make a decision, is this okay or not? Along in the same time period here, we have inside China. Now, China's a big nation and she's on the hit list. If you remember The Keys of This Blood, written by Malachi Martin, the writer of the Catholic Church. Inside China, nuclear submarines capable of widespread attack on U.S. And it shows this. What we need is the price, is what it costs for this security. And how do you beat a nuclear bomb? I think that's all I'm going to read out of that, Paul. New report says 1 out of 5 children now mentally, 1 out of every 5 children has a mental disorder. Now, these children grow up, they get jobs, they go to schools, and so forth. Well, this was gotten for me because I wanted to know the cost. And I'll bring all of this out later, but dementia. There's no telling in what stage a person gets to in this, like the person I was telling you that killed himself because he couldn't stand the misery of his sons with missing arms, couldn't get a job. They were home all the time. And of course, the father and mother were having to put up with the squabbles that was going on because they couldn't get a job. They wanted a job and couldn't get it. Well, here we have 670,000 people diagnosed with the condition in the country alone, in this country alone, and this number is set to double over the next few years. However, dementia is far from an unequally British problem. This is talking about Britain, but it's here worldwide, as this article said. It is a worldwide challenge. Globally, someone is diagnosed with dementia every 4 seconds. Every 4 seconds. Now, this is a mind-boggling disease, and this is what you feel like when you have it. You see the way that man is sitting there in misery? Now, if he had the strength to do so, what would he do? Take a gun and start killing others because he has a hatred for the world that he was born into with this mess? And maybe he even knows this. The Pope and his organization, which started this way back in the days of Kush, when he fathered the schools that we see like West Point, there's several here in America that set the standards of the great schools. Now, this started with Kush. They were the schools of higher learning, supposedly, where if you want a job in the military now, you could train for it, and the officers are picked from these schools that run the army of the world. And of course, they're all Catholic schools. and the teachers are Catholic teachers and so forth. So, but they don't train you in righteousness. This is not something you can go to and learn what the scripture says or what Yahweh says will bring you salvation. This article, this sermon, series of sermons, however long it takes, is the demand for the Pope and the Vatican and the Great Eight to let my people go. Praise Yahweh. The Pope right now, let me speak directly to you. You have a large mountain behind you, a really large mountain. Your mount represents armed forces, to which I'll bring later, but the cost is tremendous. You can't believe the amount of armed forces we have in the United States. We think of a few of them, you know. You know, Army, Navy, and Marines, and the police officers that guard the cities. But it's far more than that. That's only a drop in the bucket to the amount of armed forces that we have that are trying to protect our children from getting shot in the schools or us getting shot in the airports, as one this week showed that he is capable of getting in. But he just goes in and kills himself. He didn't even want to kill somebody else. He just wanted to show that he could, and then he wanted to get himself out of this misery that he's in. Well, you, Francis, you are the high priest over the Babylon, which means confusion, that the world is facing today, the Nimrod, which means rebellion. Kush fathered this Nimrod system that means rebellion, which is what you are. You rebel against Yahweh's laws. You rebel against Yahweh's peace, so you have no peace. You rebel against Yahweh's laws of health, so the whole world is sick and dying, including you. You're dying right now, you and all of your predecessors and those following you are carrying the same diseases that are killing you, but it's also preventing you from achieving what Yahweh has actually promised in Genesis 1. Your knowledge and technology has reached nuclear. Nuclear is as high as you can go. That's it for you. You can't go any higher like Yeshua did. You will never be able to move the mountains as shown that Yeshua could. Turn first to Genesis 1, and let's get this on record, because a lot of people out there that are hearing this will never turn to it in a Bible or a King James Version. But mankind was actually created to be given authority. He must be trained for it, of course, or bred for it like Yeshua was, and then trained. But he's got to prove first that he is capable of this authority. And of course, I'll show you the authority that it takes to move mountains, Francis. If you will study with me, you'll see this. But then Yahweh said, I will make man in my image and after my likeness. Now, if you won't attend the appointments with Yahweh, which he shows you, come and study with me every seventh day Sabbath. That's my day. That's my appointment with mankind. And then he gives us other feast days to come and study with him so that he can make us in his likeness and his image. And with that, notice what you receive next when you're made in his likeness and his image. Now, this takes in what we see in Yeshua, because Yeshua was the perfect specimen of Yahweh in the flesh. And Yeshua sinned not. That was the one thing that brought him this power, sinning not. Now, we've got to overcome sin. We're different from Yeshua in the fact that we have sinned. So we've got to overcome. He who overcomes, though, will receive, Yeshua said. Remember, he will receive authority over all things. Most people read this and they never understand what a massed promise this is, and what massed authority this is that we're going to receive, and how we could actually move mountains. But Pope Francis, you will never go any higher than nuclear. Nuclear won't move the mountain, or won't cause the mountain to move by itself. I want you to go over to Matthew 21, because here it shows the great power that it takes to create and maintain flesh, or to move a mountain. In Matthew 21, and start with verse 18, he says, now in the morning, as he was returning to the city, he was hungry, and when he saw a fig tree along the way, he went to it. But when he found nothing but leaves on it, he said unto it, may fruit never grow on you again. And the fig tree withered at once. Now this is Yeshua talking, and you'd think, well, this is what the witches do. Hocus pocus, diddly docus. When the disciples saw this, they marveled, saying, how soon the fig tree withered away. Yeshua answered and said to them, truly I say unto thee, if you have faith. Well, here is the first thing that they get mixed up, because they take this word and they say, well, that means confidence. And I actually saw one preacher that did this, trying to muster up faith and in front of the audience, and then he said, be healed. And the person would faithfully, fall on the floor. Then they'd get up and they'd say, now can you see? What he should have said, well, I could always see. Why are you asking me that? And he said, yeah, I can see. He's healed. And of course, this fake mess is what you're carrying forth today when you're trying to impress the people. You're trying to make out like you care for people while millions are being killed throughout the earth, and the wars would stop if your great eight, as you call them, or 16, or whatever it is you trust in, would give the word to stop the wars. All you army officers, come back home. Take off your uniforms. Learn war no more. Well, that would shut down all the colleges in America. Well, they start enlisting them before that. They start enlisting them in high school. They have their buses waiting on them to truck them to the enlistment station now. That's what I'm told anyway. But it's not faith. It's the whole system of salvation offered to mankind to receive the system and follow that system instead of the Nimrod system. The Nimrod system is rebel. Of course, that cuts you off, and it cuts your authority off. It stops you from being able to say to whatever he was talking to here, take life from this bush, from this fig bush. If you have faith, if you would be following, like I have all my life, that's what Yahshua, not me, but Yahshua did all of his life. He followed this faith that Yahweh gave him, which is the whole system of religion. He was made in the likeness and image of Yahweh, 100%. So he was able to be recognized by the creeping things that had control and was giving life to this bush, this fig tree. And when he gave the command, then they left it. If you have faith and do not doubt, you will not only do what was done to the fig tree, but also if you say to this mountain, be taken up and cast into the sea, it would be done. And all these things, whatsoever you asked in prayer, believing all that the prophets have spoken now, not just an empty faith, but believing all that the prophets have spoken, you can't be a fool and receive this power. And Yahshua says you're a fool if you don't believe all that the prophets have spoken. Luke 24, verse 25. Now, that's 22. There's something in Mark 17 that shows something different than what he showed here. Turn over to Mark 17 and notice here verse 20. Matthew. I just said that to check you out. Matthew 17. There's one word here. One word that shows that it's different. Now, it could be taken up by another means, a mountain could, and cast into the sea. That's true. You could do that. But notice in this verse, it reads differently. If you have faith as a grain of mustard seed and would say to this mountain, remember now he clarified that grain of mustard seed earlier and said it's the smallest of all seed. That's the way it starts. It starts with sinners. It's Matthew Matithia, 17, verse 20. And he said it starts with the smallest seed, but it's going to grow into the biggest, strongest tree on earth or in the universe. So he clarified it. And he said, and Yahshua said to them, because of your unbelief, you're not following. You say, well, this little sin is not going to matter. That's unbelief, right? And you say, oh, nothing will occur. You know, they're not looking at me. I can get away with stealing. No, you can't. And I'll show you why. It turns certain things off for you. What you do behind closed doors is also revealed. He said, what is said in the darkness is going to be revealed in the light. So Yahweh is very aware of what is going on in your private lives. And if you do decide to sin, you're rejecting and you're showing unbelief and you're rejecting what the power that, or the righteousness that would get you this authority that's promised in Genesis 1:26. So he said, if you have faith as a grain of mustard seed, that is, if you're growing and started with a grain like very small, you would say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it, notice it, it. The other one was, it was taken up and cast by another power. This, it, will move on its own. Look at that. That whole mountain, it will move on its own, and it will move. And nothing will be impossible for you. Right now, the only being that everything is possible for him to do is Yahweh himself. But you're coming to this point. This is what is promised to you in Genesis 1:26. That's why you're called here to his house to meet with Yahweh, to be enlightened, to bring you a little closer, step by step by step, to this perfection that Yahshua actually accomplished. The wind, Francis, be turning over to Mark. Mark 4, that is Mark 4, I'm not tricking you anymore. Mark 4, the wind will never obey you. The wind hears, they will hear Yahweh's family, the wind will. The wind will never obey you, and that's greater than any nuclear war. If you saw what it did last week, now that's probably a minor storm to what you're going to see if you don't let my people go. There's thousands of people that's wanting right now to come and keep their appointment with Yahweh, to keep his feast. And as Moshe said to Pharaoh, and I know you hold the seat of Pharaoh. That's the original name for the seat you hold. Then you came into Israel, and you took the name as elders. Then you took the name of priest of Jerusalem. Then you changed that and said, no, we're Pharisees, Sadducees, Essenes, and Herodians. We're the only four religions that can get along with each other. The rest of them are dead. We're going to kill you. And they set out to do that. But you were called priest of Jerusalem. And that's where you brought your profaneness, you pharaohs of Egypt. You brought Egypt with you. And this is all a matter of history and a matter of scripture. And then when you saw after you killed the Savior and Yochanan, you saw you couldn't control your brothers and sisters there. And you couldn't get them to follow your evil teachings. So then you decided to go ahead and go to the two cities that you created first, Babylon and Rome. And that's where you had your general Titus move the temple and its artifacts. And you've had it there ever since, including the book of the law. The book of the law has still not been taken from you. As Yahshua said, it was given unto you, and you have not obeyed it. And you still have the book of the law with you, and you still haven't obeyed it. And obeying the book of the law is exactly what will make you in the form, in the image, and likeness of Yahweh himself. Look at Mark now, Mark 4, and look at verse 39. Mark 4 and verse 39. He says, "And he rose," that is Yahshua, "he rebuked the wind." He rebuked the wind. Could you do this right now? That's what Yahweh has got in store for you. Now, what is in the wind that would obey you, actually obey a person's voice? And why wouldn't it obey us right now? Why will it never obey the Pope? "He rebuked the wind and said to the sea, 'Be quiet.'" He said that in Hebrew. He spoke in Hebrew. "Be quiet. Be still." And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. "And he said to them, 'Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith?'" Now, he had been training them in this faith for a while at that time, but they still hadn't caught on. Maybe there's missing services. Maybe they had their mind on something, on their shoes or their telephone or pushing buttons or whatever, and they didn't actually take note of what is really important here. And that is learning the laws and learning righteousness, total righteousness. "And they feared exceedingly and said one to another, 'What kind of man is this, that even the wind and the sea obey him?'" Now, this is a decision that the wind and the sea, it's a decision they made. Like the mountain. If you got this authority, then the mountain itself will actually move from wherever it is to the place you say for it to go. And you got to admit that's a pretty great power, and you would have it at your tongue, at your command. My time is up. And Francis, I'll leave you hanging there. And if you'll be at Yahweh's appointment next week, try to be here at his house. But if not, listen on your radio there, your television, and we will take you one step closer to understanding that what real power you can get. Nuclear power is not a drop in the bucket than what Yahweh has. Yahweh could say to a huge iceberg, "Hit the earth." He could kill it. He could wipe it out. All the life on earth. He could wipe it out with just a command. Now that's the power he wants to give you. Every one of you sitting here, you all have the same opportunity to get it. Don't think that you can hide sin. It cuts you off from this power. It will, and I'll show you next week, next Sabbath, if you'll be here, I'll show you how it does. May Yahweh bless you, and I'll turn the services back to the next speaker. I love you!